Top of the morning to you, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at OffbeatOregon.com, your host for today's Daily Dollop of the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thanks for downloading, and I hope you enjoy it. This story was first published on December 1st of 2020 under the headline, Portland's Rabbi Started a Gunfight, outside the President of the United States hotel room. Here we go. October 1st, 1880 was a very big day in Portland. For the first time in the history of the city or the state, a sitting president of the United States had come to visit. President Rutherford B. Hayes had arrived in Portland the night before and was staying in the Esmond Hotel, the nicest one in Portland at the time, on the corner of Morrison and Front Streets. Portland was, of course, very much a frontier town in 1880, still dotted with the stumps of the trees that had been cleared to make room for it. So it can't have come as too much of a surprise to the president when at 9:30 the next morning a gunfight broke out directly beneath his hotel window. He was probably a little more surprised, though, when he found out who the gunfighters were. It was the president of the local synagogue and the rabbi. Congregation Beth Israel is the oldest Jewish congregation in Oregon. It started out in 1858 with eight members meeting in a garret over a blacksmith shop. Like Portland itself, it grew fast. By 1880, it had a proper synagogue building at 5th and Oak and a sizable membership. But also like Portland, it had some growing pains to get through. One of these was the problem with finding and keeping a rabbi. Portland at that time was a jumping-off town, very nearly as close to the edge of civilization as one could get. The congregation had some difficulty finding a rabbi, a man of learning, who would move so far away from the centers of learning to accept $1,000 a year salary. But the congregation's rabbi troubles probably stemmed not so much from their remoteness and low pay as from the other big challenge. Beth Israel was a congregation made up almost entirely of immigrants from various other parts of the world, and each member wanted Portland's only synagogue to use the Siddur, prayer book, and general style of Judaism practiced in his or her home country. That meant that some Beth Israelites favored the Minhag Polin prayer book used in much of Eastern Europe. Others preferred the Minhag Ashkenaz used in parts of Western Europe. A third group was pushing Beth Israel to become a reform congregation and had actually created a new prayer book called the Minhag Portland. The Orthodox believers, that would be Minhag Polin and Minhag Ashkenaz, were resisting this trend fairly fiercely. And obviously the question of who was rabbi was a pretty important part of the struggle. In the early 1870s, the Reform members won a majority on the board of directors and fired the Orthodox rabbi, Dr. Isaac Schwab. In his place, they elevated a young minister named Moses May. Rabbi May proposed immediately to drop the Minhag Ashkenaz, which Beth Israel was using at the time, and replace it with the Minhag America, which Reform Rabbi Isaac Meyer Wise of Albany, New York, had created in 1857 in hopes that it would help unify American Jews. In Portland, it did not have any such effect. Almost immediately upon May's arrival, the Orthodox Minhag Polin adherents split from the synagogue and formed their own congregation called Ahavai Shalom, Lovers of Peace. The Orthodox congregants who favored the Minhag Ashkenaz, however, stayed in Beth Israel and fought back. They did this with a campaign to get rid of Rabbi May. They complained to Beth Israel's board of directors, accusing him, as author I. Harold Scharfman reports, of, quote, referring to the married women of the congregation as ladies of easy virtue, casting aspersions upon his own wife in public, outrageously slandering and blackmailing several members of the congregation, condemning himself by his own actions as an immoral man and an unbeliever in the doctrines of Holy Writ, acting as a libertine and a rake during a visit to San Francisco, calling the officers and members of the congregation outlandish names, threatening to join the Unitarian Church in the event that Mr. Philip Selling, an Orthodox congregant, were re-elected president, opening mail belonging to others for the purposes of slandering the authors of the letters, and when he was called a liar, blackguard, scoundrel, and villain, he offered no word for defense, but walked away, and therefore gave rise to the belief that he felt himself guilty of those charges. The board investigated and absolved May of all charges, but the adventure got May's blood up, and he was now determined that Beth Israel was going to convert to Minhag America, whether the Orthodox members liked it or not. It became official in 1879, the year before Oregon's first and, hopefully, only rabbinical gunfight. By then, a business owner and Orthodox congregant named A. Waldman had been elected president of Beth Israel. Waldman and May had been cordial enemies ever since May first came to Portland in 1872 to be Beth Israel's rabbi. But during the days before the gunfight, relations between the two had become really sour. In his yearly report on the Sunday School, of which he served as secretary, Waldman had written, "The progress of our school would have been more encouraging but for the ungentlemanly conduct of Rabbi May toward both scholars and teachers." May, incensed, had gone to Waldman's clothing store, stationed himself in front of the door, and shouted, "You're a liar," into it. Waldman had shot back that he couldn't do it in the store, but at his very next opportunity he would beat May up. And apparently, Waldman's very next opportunity came along at 9:30 a.m. the next morning, on the street, directly beneath the hotel suite occupied by the President of the United States. At that fateful hour, Rabbi May was standing in the street conversing with a friend when President Waldman approached him from behind and, without warning, seized his coat, spun him around, and smashed his glasses against his face with two full-powered punches. Half-blinded and wild with pain and rage, Rabbi May pulled a pistol out of his frock coat pocket and opened fire. Most likely he was armed with a double-barreled Derringer because he had only two shots on tap. The first one was a clean miss. The second shot tore through Waldman's coat sleeve, but also missed him. Then, as May fumbled for cartridges, a bystander tackled him to the ground and disarmed him, at which point Waldman recovered from the shock and pounced upon him. More bystanders had to get involved to drag him off his disarmed enemy. Finally, a policeman arrived and arrested them both. In court, Waldman was fined for assault. After all, he had started it. As for May, if any charges were filed against him, I haven't been able to learn what they were. Most likely, discharging a firearm within city limits was not yet a crime in Portland in 1880, but he didn't exactly get off scot-free. Rabbi Moses May left his position immediately. It's obvious that he was asked to stand down. The board bought out the balance of his two-year contract to the tune of $1,200, and he left town. Everyone understood that the provocation had been great, but as Rabbi Wise himself, the author of the Minhag America, remember, later wrote in his magazine, American Israelite, "Did you ever hear of a rabbi carrying a pistol?" "There is, of course, a vacancy in the Portland congregation," Wise added, "and poor May will have to either go to peddling or join the Shooting Baptists." Waldman, who was entirely uninjured in the fight, paid his fine and carried on with his quest to keep Beth Israel Orthodox. It was to no avail. Beth Israel never did officially switch back to Minhag Ashkenaz, although the Orthodox members battled on for another 20 years. President Rutherford Hayes, who most likely didn't see the gunfight but was definitely endangered by Rabbi May's wild flying pistol bullets flitting about the street a few dozen feet from his window, left the hotel as if nothing had happened an hour later to visit some local notables. He gave a speech to about 9,000 Portlanders at the Mechanics Pavilion that evening, and over the next few days visited an Indian school in Forest Grove, celebrated his 58th birthday on board the steernwheeler Wide West, and attended another gala reception in the Dalles. By October 7th, he had moved on to the Washington Territory, and at the end of the month, he was back in Astoria, catching a steamer headed south to San Francisco and eventually back home to the White House, where he would, one presumes, be safe from those crazy frontier Jewish rabbi gunfighters. Key sources in this story included works by I. Harold Scharfman, Christine Deacon, the Oregon State Archives Facebook page, and the October 1858 issue of the American Jewish Archives. That's our show for today. Thanks again for listening. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Offbeat Organ History is a division of Pulplit Productions, a boutique publishing house, about which more can be learned at pulp-lit.com. In addition to Offbeat Organ books, audiobooks, and this podcast, we publish book and audiobook versions of collections of what you might call street literature. 1920s pulp magazine writers like H.P. Lovecraft and Edgar Rice Burroughs, gothic penny dreadful titles like Sweeney Todd and The Adventures of Highwayman Dick Turpin, all straight shots of bottled-in Bond working man's fiction and working women's fiction from the last couple centuries. If that sounds like your jam, I'd love to have you check them out. You can find out more at pulp-lit.com. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and learn more at atlasstringband.com. Episodes of Offbeat Organ History are uploaded around 6 a.m. every weekday, so the next one will be on your device and ready to go before you know it. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day with good stuff. Bye now.